You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette. It's Friday, time for our reporter roundtable, where we get you up to date on all of the news that made headlines this week around our region, which also means a lot of news coming out of the legislature as well. Joining me live in studio today, Kevin Richert with Idaho Education News, Scott McIntosh with the Idaho Press, and Bill Manny with Idaho Public Television. Happy Friday.
Hi, Gemma.
Thank you.
All right. So, Kevin, I want to get right to the state capitol. It was Education Week at the State House. And for people who aren't aware of what this is, there is one week in January every year where every higher education institution, public institution, comes and basically presents to the Joint Finance Committee. They present to both sides of the legislature. Right. And basically, they make a case for more money.
Right. I mean, this is the week where JFAC, the legislature's budget committee, goes through the budget requests from the colleges and the universities and the K-12 budget requests. So we're talking about hearings to break down the details of budgets that comprise more than 60% of where Idaho's budget goes. Mm-hmm. So these are some big deal hearings that affect a lot of money, but also affect a lot of students from K-12 through college.
Oh, let's focus on K-12 because Sherry Ybarra, state superintendent, she presents as well. And she gave a presentation. And how did that work with what Brad Little is wanting to do education-wise?
Well, there are a lot of differences. A surprising number of differences really kind of jumped out at me as Ybarra did her budget presentation on Thursday, and you look at the spreadsheet and it compares her requests with the governor's. Very stark differences. Some quick differences. Little's proposal to double what we spend on literacy, on early reading programs. That doesn't appear in Ybarra's budget. That's Little's priority. That's what he unveiled in January. Ybarra wants to put money into a lot of different programs that really didn't get a whole lot of traction in the committee on Thursday. She had a chance to kind of walk through the school safety plan that she unveiled, and she would like to get funding for this right away. There wasn't a single question on the school safety plan from any of the 20 members of the committee, which that tells you a lot. I mean, that gives you a sense that that proposal really isn't going anywhere. It's not part of Brad Little's budget request. Even after the hearing, when Ybarra met with reporters and was asked about it, you know, she said, well, yeah, it is kind of a tough year to get funding for a new program. The dollars are tight, but we're going to keep talking about this issue. We're going to keep the issue alive. So I think you got a kind of a philosophical sense from her that this proposal probably is not going to go anywhere. And when I talked to one of the key legislators, Rick Youngblood, who is the House co-chair of JFAC, he said, look, I sat in on a webinar about this program about a month ago. I still have a lot of questions. It's not happening this year.
So how does this work then when the two don't mesh? And what I mean by that is Sherry Ybarra's proposal versus, you know, Governor Little's unveiling, especially when it comes to reading, as you talked about.
Well, that's where JFAC, that's where the budget committee really begins its work. After all of these hearings, after all of these presentations, it will be up to that legislative committee to write a budget. And it will be their decision and really series of decisions on the K-12 budget as to, are we going to fund Governor Little's request? Are we going to fund Superintendent Ybarra's request? Are we going to do something completely different? Are we going to kind of split the difference in some way? I mean, we're talking about numbers. You can carve up numbers any way you want, and the committee will have to make those decisions. But when the school safety plan didn't come up at all, I think I kind of is a pretty obvious tell from the committee. There were some questions asked about some of her other priorities, like mastery-based education, trying to put more money into that program. Yeah. I think the biggest decision, really, for the budget committee when it comes to the education budget, the K-12 budget, is what to do about teacher salaries. Governor Little wants to put even more money into teacher salaries, but who wants to put it into starting salaries, minimum salaries? Ybarra's request, which is a costlier request, would put more money into salaries for veteran teachers to try to keep veteran teachers in the classroom, which has been a recurring concern for schools all across the state. Well, we can get teachers in, but we can't keep them in a lot of cases. So that's a really different stark philosophical difference between these two budgets, and it's really going to be up to the budget committee and the legislature as a whole to decide which is a priority.
And then did the funding formula even come up at all?
There was mention of it. There was some discussion of it. But again, we haven't even seen a funding formula bill yet. So not a lot of detailed discussion about how the funding formula would affect the K-12 budget.
We'll get to higher ed in a little bit. I want to bring Bill and Scott into the conversation. So, Scott, talk to me about the city of Boise wanting to reduce single-car commute trips. And they've got what? They're 2029. I am fascinated by this because we don't even have a decent bus system. And I don't believe I'm saying that as an opinion. I think everyone would tend to agree with that.
Well, a couple really interesting things happened this week. So on Tuesday, Boise City Council proposed setting a goal of a 10% reduction in the number of solo commuter trips drivers take in cars by 2029. Now, that is a tall order because the city estimates that we're going to see 50,000 new residents in the next two decades, leading to an additional 200,000 new daily vehicle trips by 2040.
Did you say 200,000?
200,000 new vehicle trips per day in 20 years. So to come out and say we're going to reduce solo car trips by 2029 in 10 years is pretty ambitious. But a couple other things happened this week that I think are telling, and to see how this might start shaking out. First of all, Valley Regional Transit announced a partnership with Lyft to get people to bus stops. And so that you can pay $2 to get yourself to a bus stop. And then that happens on January 28th. The other thing that's happening on January 28th is that Valley Regional Transit is changing their service, some of their routes. They're actually increasing frequency and consolidating some routes so that some routes are going to be every 15 minutes. So you can kind of see where this is going, where Valley Regional Transit is going to try to get people to more major thoroughfares.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to get yourself there. We're not going to send out buses to every little side street. And
We're not picking you up at your house.
Yeah. Or even, you know, a mile or two away from your house. You're going to have to get to the bus stop or the bus station. And this is kind of, you know, a little bit like a train system, you know, where you go to the train station and you somehow get yourself there by bike or by Lyft or by car. And you get on the bus and you know that no matter when you get there, within the next 15 minutes, that's the goal anyway, you can pick up a bus and get yourself to downtown Boise. So all of this stuff coming at the same time, I think, is really interesting, and I think it's telling to see where we might be headed with our limited resources toward public transit.
So here would be a question, though. That sounds all well and good. When we say, it's only $2 for Lyft to get you to a bus station, is there still, though, this idea of a lot of people that need service, who need transportation on a bus, do not have the ability to pay the $2 for Lyft because they probably don't even own a car, and talk about living paycheck to paycheck and all of this. Was any of that brought up, or am I just kind of out of touch thinking about that?
I think the Lyft thing is a little gimmicky. I think it'll help some people who might be doing something last minute. But you're right. I don't think it's a viable option for people to do that every day if they're going to go to work. But it's just one piece of the puzzle. And again, it's more encouraging to get people to those main routes rather than try to go pick them up where they live.
Yeah. Bill?
I think what's interesting about the Lyft notion is how the idea of ride sharing and ride sharing technology is going to affect transit. And I think before 2029, right? Think about how people got around 10 years ago. Uber and Lyft didn't even exist. Mm-hmm. And now there's a whole different way we think about getting around. I know young people, including some of my own kids, who don't want to own a car. It is no longer the ticket to freedom that it was when you and I were kids. Now it's an anchor, an anchor around your ankle, right? So I think the notion of involving ride sharing technology as an assist to our transportation system is the revolutionary idea. Now, is a $2 ride to the bus stop going to work? Probably not. But the notion that you have technology that's going to connect rides with people, I think is going to fundamentally change the way we get people around and affect the way we plan for mass transit in the future. Mm-hmm. So I think 2029 is an interesting idea. Lyft and Uber are interesting ideas. And I think together, it's good to see that Boise and Valley Regional Transit are thinking about how to make what hasn't worked in the past work using new technology.
Well, and the every 15-minute idea, because I the complaint that I've heard numerous times is that, A, the routes don't get you where you want to go, or they take so long, or you have to wait so long.
Or they stop too early in the evening. Yeah. That's the other issue, is the limited hours.
And they've added routes to the airport back to 9:30 p.m. instead of 6:30. So they are, you know,
what a concept.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah. But they're consolidating and trying to improve those routes, because that's the big catch-22, is that, well, nobody rides it because there aren't enough routes because not enough people ride it, and the funding mechanism isn't there for it. So, you know, if they can achieve some economies of scale here, you know, that we might actually see some movement on this.
And it's a good thing. I mean, especially when you look at the numbers that you talked about, Scott.
Well, and that's the other thing. State Street, you know, that's the other piece of this puzzle. So State Street, all the construction that's going on there, mm-hmm. they're adding lanes, including bus lanes. So dedicated bus lanes are coming to State Street. So, again, if you can get yourself to State Street in Eagle and then hop on a bus, mm-hmm. and the bus is going to take you right to downtown Boise with, you know, maybe five or six stops, and you can get down there more efficiently, you know, that's another piece of the puzzle.
And I'm sure this wouldn't be City of Boise, but any discussion yet about HOV lanes? Are we big enough for something like that?
You know, so they're talking about that on State Street as well, high occupancy vehicle lanes on State Street in addition to the bus lanes. I haven't heard anything about I-84.
Yeah.
I've heard that is a non-starter. And I don't know why, but
I was in Salt Lake City this week, and they have technology that lets you use HOV lanes or toll lanes, without booths to go through in or out. So I think technology again is going to change the way we get around, and I think Scott's right. If ACHD and the state and the city can figure out State Street, that'll go a long way to dealing with some of these issues.
We are continuing our Friday Reporter Roundtable. My guest today, Bill Manny with Idaho Public Television, Kevin Richard with Idaho Education News, and Scott McIntosh with Idaho Press. We started the last segment talking about K-12 and what happened at the State House this week with Education Week. Kevin, let's talk a little bit about higher ed, because all of the universities presented. Chuck Staben, outgoing president, the University of Idaho, kind of gave his swan song to JFAC. Let's talk a little bit about that.
And it was interesting, and it sort of tied into one of the recurring themes that we heard from all eight of the college and university presidents. They all took turns praising the idea of putting more money into college scholarships. And this is one of Brad Little's big budget requests in education for next year. He wants to take Idaho's Opportunity Scholarship and take it from $13.5 million to $20.5 million. So it's a fairly big increase on top of increases that the legislature has approved in past years. What Staben did in his presentation was he challenged the budget committee not just to fund this thing, but he also sort of put some of the university's own scholarship money on the line and said, we have 500 students that we've identified who we really want to see come to the University of Idaho, and we really think that they will be eligible for one of these scholarships if you fund it. So we're going to send these students letters and say, if the Opportunity Scholarship doesn't come through, if they don't come up with the $3,500 a year from the state, we'll pay for it for the first year. We'll cover your scholarship difference. I mean, obviously, he's hoping it wouldn't come to that, and the university isn't hoping that it would come to that. I mean, they're hoping that it sort of, you know, further ignites discussion about increasing the scholarship, and he said he's doing it partly because he's pretty optimistic that Little's request is going to come to fruition. But a lot of talk about the scholarship. But even with this increase, even if you added the $7 million that Governor Little is talking about, it's not going to take care of the entire backlog. There are more than 3,400 students on a waiting list for this scholarship right now.
Wow.
Yeah. And the $7 million would cover at least 2,000 scholarships, you know, maybe a little bit more depending on how much money each student gets. But that's not just new students. That's scholarship money for students who are already in the system, because rightly so, the state board does not want to just give a scholarship to a student in his or her first year and then second year.
Yeah, take it away.
Yeah, good luck, kid. You're on your own.
Thanks for getting that
go
first
to the
year,
bank,
John.
Pick out some loans.
Yeah.
So the idea of continuing scholarships is a big deal. So it's really hard to tell how many new students would get scholarships under the $7 million, but it's safe to say that there's still going to be a waiting list. Mm-hmm. There's still going to be a backlog.
So Chuck Stevens has always been this really interesting character to me, and I hate to see him go, but it's interesting to see how he's kind of speaking truth to power these days. But I wondered if there were any legislators who said, heck, if the university has all this money, whether we give them money or not, let's just skip the money. Did that come up, Kevin? Did they talk about that?
That didn't. I mean, that's an interesting point. And, I think that there's a lot of, I think there's a lot of reckoning going on within this budget committee about kind of what are we doing here? Mm. I mean, there was a line of questioning this morning when Boise State was up, when Martin Schimpf, who's the interim president at Boise State, was doing his presentation. And the question of, well, are we shifting money around and we're still going to be looking at tuition increases? Because, and when Schimpf was up for his presentation, he was asked, well, do you foresee a tuition increase at Boise State? And he said, well, between inflation and paying for employee raises, it could be about a 5% increase. That's a very preliminary estimate. That's not even really Boise State's call. The state board will figure that out in the spring. So, I mean, nobody really put Staben back on the spot like you're asking, Bill. But I think there's sort of a question of, well, are we just kind of shifting dollars around in some way? And then in some manner, there's still going to be more pressure on students and parents.
So I want to talk a little bit about what the Boise City Attorney said the other day, because there's been this talk with the new main library expansion in Boise, talk of a sports park, and now, with this commitment for a semi-pro soccer team to come in, where shall they play, all of that. Some people are saying, all of this should come up for a vote. People should have the ability to say yes or no. Scott, then the city attorney comes out and says, well, not really.
Well, right. And so this is a group of residents who want to bring a ballot initiative to the ballot to call a public vote on these projects. And the Boise City Attorney weighed in and said that it would be unconstitutional. It would preempt state law and could expose the city to lawsuits for breach of contract and may give rise to tortious interference with contract claims. I'm quoting from
well, you
from
have
the
to
city
you
attorney.
Have to quote from the city attorney with his legalese.
Yeah, and I'm no attorney, so I'm not sure I quite understand all of the details of that argument. But
you can't explain tortious interference.
Right. I mean, come on, Scott. What are we bringing you on
studying,
for?
studying up on that. But it does set up an interesting battle, I guess, whether the residents can still go ahead and say, we're going to go get the signatures and get a petition together and get this on the ballot, whether you like it or not. But it is just kind of an odd argument, it seems to me, for the city to be making, saying that, well, we've already gone down this road and we've already, made some commitments and, to go back on that just because you, the voters, say that you don't want to do this.
Too bad.
I mean, so it'll be interesting. So they're weighing it. And, Representative John Gannon, a Democrat from Boise, is on this group, is kind of the spokesperson for this group. And, he's taking a reasonable tact with this and saying, okay, well, we're going to take this opinion and we're going to bring it back to the group and see what everybody says and see if there is legal justification for that position. And maybe we'll go forward and see what we want to do. And he says, we don't want a lawsuit. We want to compromise. We want to come up with a solution. But it does, I think it brings up the greater issue of, how can the city be kind of going forward with this stuff without kind of asking the voters? And I know we have representative city council, but I think there are a lot of voters who think, aren't we supposed to be voting on an $85 million project? Shouldn't we have some sort of say in this rather than just
the city deciding?
Yeah.
Well, Bill. You know, city government can't have a referendum every time they make a decision. But, you know, but to this point, you have a group of really powerful people, and it's Representative Gannon, it's Bob Custer. I mean, these are not gadflies out there saying you need to hear more from the community. And so it's a really interesting position that the city is in. And now, yes, you can be very legalistic about it, and you can use this traitorous logic, or you can say, hey, we'll have an advisory vote. I mean, the city can do that. And I think that's what this group is saying to the city is let's not have a legal fight over whether we have this plebiscite. You can take this step, city. And I think it's a really interesting moment when the city's saying, well, we're not sure we want to hear from our citizens. And yet, often they would argue that that's exactly what they do. So I think it's going to be really interesting to watch it play out, and I'm not sure exactly how it's all going to work out.
And my question is, are they saying it's unconstitutional right now for these specific projects, in particular maybe the library, because they have gone into contracts? Or would it be unconstitutional for future endeavors?
We know there was that issue many years ago about removing the monument from the park, and the city, the citizens tried to have a initiative to try to overturn that, and that was ruled unconstitutional. So there does seem to be some legal fig leaf here on which to hang your...
Well, I think it has to do with an administrative decision. So that's what the city attorney is kind of saying, that this is an administrative decision, and which is kind of an interesting argument. Because this is not a legislative decision that is being taken by the city council. So in other words, by the Constitution, you can't have the voters overturn an administrative decision by the city council. So again, I'm not a lawyer, but that's kind of how I'm reading that little piece of that.
It's fascinating. And then we're in an election season with Mayor Beter in Boise. I mean, whether that plays into it or not, but it's just another wrinkle to think about in all of this.
Yes, we're all nodding our heads.
Everyone's
yes.
nodding their heads. So, Bill, two proposals came up this week, one about cell phones and abortion. But the cell phone proposal, if I have this right, is that certain cities in Idaho want to say, nope, you can't use your cell phones when you're within city limits. And,
correct.
And the legislature's saying, whoa, you can't do that.
So what you have here, it's interesting that we're morphing from one conversation about city powers to another. And so Idaho Falls and Pocatello either have or want to pass bans on use of your cell phone in your car. And here's a freshman legislator from that part of the state saying, no, that's government overreach. And I think one could argue that what he's proposing as a response to government overreach is equally government overreach. You know, what does the state communicate to cities about their powers? The state has told them they can't regulate ride-sharing companies. So we already know that there's a history of the Idaho legislature telling cities what they can and can't do. What I think is interesting is now the city, in the case of Boise, is telling the citizens what they can and can't do. So where does it all work out? And it's Idaho, and it's crazy, and I don't want to predict.
There you go. I want to thank you guys for coming in this Friday. My guests, Bill Manny with Idaho Public Television, Kevin Richert with Idaho Education News, and Scott McIntosh with the Idaho Press. We never get to everything, but I think we get to the meat of issues. I appreciate you guys coming in.